We're going to do today a piece from Rav Meidan, Rav Yaakov Meidan. Rav Meidan has a book called, he has a series. He actually put out Bereishit and Shemot, the other three volumes I'm sure he's working on as we speak. Rav Meidan is a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshivat Har Tzion, in the Gush. And he, for many years before he became Rosh Yeshiva, he was most well known for his Shiurim on Tanakh. I remember when I was in Chalabim in the late 80s, early 90s, he came once a week.
Then?
Sure, you don't know?
No,
sure,
cool.
He went, I didn't go to the high school.
Then.
Yeah. He would come once a week. We were not allowed to go, but we went anyway, the Americans. Mm-hmm. I think Shana bet we were allowed to go. Like, it was very, very advanced. He gives these really, really advanced shiurim on Tanakh. And he's hard to understand, incredibly hard to understand, because he speaks like a million miles an hour. And what he always does is he sees the Tanakh as a unified book. It's unbelievable the way he does it. And uses examples in Tanakh to illustrate from one story to the other. And we're going to see that today. Just a small example, we're going to see that today. So his book develops fascinating themes in Tanakh, which are worthwhile to understand. He asks really interesting questions and comes up with really interesting answers to explain those questions. But he also has to make certain compromises, as we'll soon see in the text, in order to explain. And I'm speaking in generalities, but you'll understand soon. So we're going to start. Toldot is the story of the birth. Well, just in briefly, it's the birth of Yitzchak and Rivka's sons, Yaakov and Esav, right? Yaakov good, Esav not so good, less good. It's a story of Yitzchak's interaction with the surrounding communities, right? How he interacts with them, how he deals with them. And then, of course, the end of the parsha is the story of the birthright, right? That Yaakov steals the birthright of Esav. So that's the general of the story. We're going to start with Perek Kafhei.
Starts on your tent.
Pasuk. Where do I want to start? Here. You know what? Let's start with.
Oh no!
Start with the beginning. Vayele ve'ele. Pasuk yutet. We'll start at the beginning. We'll just read quickly a few psukim. Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham olidit Yitzchak. Abraham begat Isaac. Vayi Yitzchak ben Arba'im shana bekachto at Rivka ba'petuel Arami mipanan Aram. Achod Lavan ha'Arami lo li'isha. Yitzchak is 40 when he marries Rivka ba'petuel from Padan Aram, the sister of Lavan. Okay, we've discussed this before. We'll discuss it, I'm sure, in the future, but we're going to keep going. Vayi etar Yitzchak la'Hashem lenochach ishto ki akarahi. Yitzchak daven lenochach, opposite his wife, because she was barren. She couldn't have any children. Vayi atar lo Hashem, and God was appeased by him, or you know, accepted his prayer. Vatar Rivka ishto, she became pregnant. So the kids were fighting inside of her. Something was wrong. The twins were going bananas. Okay, and she said, "If so, wait, lama ze anochi? What, you know, vague phrase. We'll just interpret it to mean, what in the world? What I would like? Why am I doing this? Why do I need this? What's happening with me?" Obviously, there's more to understand, as you are looking in the Mefarshim, but we're not going to do it today. She goes to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu what in the world is going on. Hashem says, Shnei goyim bibitnech, u'shnei le'umim mime'ayhi paredu. You have two nations in those loins of yours, right? And two nations, two countries will come out of your me'ayim, out of your guts. U'le'om mil'om ye'ematz. Okay? I don't know what that means. Ula'om. Mil'om ye'ematz. Right. Translate. What do you got there, Demi? Ula'om mil'om ye'ematz.
The elder will serve the younger.
No, that's before that. But right before that. The phrase right before that.
The might shall pass from one regime to the other.
Ah, okay. The might shall pass from one regime to the other, i.e., they're not going to share. They're going to compete with each other. V'rav ya'avod sa'ir. Okay? This is the important phrase. Rav ya'avod sa'ir. Right? The great one, the strong one, will worship the younger one. Okay? Rav and sa'ir are not two opposites. Okay, good. Vayimlu yameha laledet v'hinei tomim bibitna. She had twins. V'hinei, behold. She knew there were twins, but nobody else knew. Which tells us, or... Well, let's see in a second. Vayetzei Rishon Admoni Kulo Kader Tzayar Vayikuchmo Esav. Everybody called him Esav. He was all hairy. They called him Esav. I don't know what that means. Vachreichen Yatza Achiv. Vayado Ochezet Ba'akev Esav. And the other one was holding on to the ankle of Esav. Vayikra Shemo Yaakov. And he called him Yaakov. Everybody called the other kid Esav. Everyone looked at him and was like, oh, that's Esav. Okay? That's Harry. Harry kid. But somebody called him Yaakov. Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Beledatotam. Yitzchak was 60. So 20 years had gone by between when they got married and when the children were born. A long time. Vayidilu ha-ne'arim. Now it gets interesting. Well, it was interesting until now, but the ne'arim grew up. Vayihi Esav ish yodea tzayid ish sadeh. He was an ish yodea tzayid. Knows how to hunt. Ish sadeh. A man of the field. Vayakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. And Yaakov was an ish tam, a man of tam. We've talked about this before too. Ish tam yoshev ohalim. A very simple, quiet, yoshev ohalim, tent dweller. They could not have been more different. Esav was the hunter, the gatherer, the strong. Yaakov, meek, quiet. Okay? Now the pasuk that's interesting. Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav ki tzayid befiv. V'rivka ohevet et Yaakov. Esav, Vayehav Yitzchak loved Esav ki tzayid befiv. Simple translation. Ki, because tzayid, his trappings, befiv.
He used to bring food.
Okay? V'rivka ohevet et Yaakov. And Rivka loved Yaakov.
Very strange.
No reason.
Right. So this is the topic. What? She just liked him better. This is the question that Rav Meidan wants to know. Like, why does Esav love, why does Yitzchak, the father, love Esav? And why does Rivka love Yaakov? What does he see about him? You know, and the answer of ki tzayid befiv, the simple explanation of ki tzayid befiv, it's difficult to understand. What, because he goes hunting? You know,
he's
like, what? Yitzchak is hungry? Rivka doesn't take care of him? When he takes care of him? He takes care of himself. He's 80, okay, but he's not the old man that we know yet.
Brings home the bacon.
No, he doesn't.
What do you mean?
Where's the bacon? Yeah. No, he doesn't. Where's the bacon from? No, he does not.
From the, he hunts for
so
them.
What? No, so, he does not. He does not support the family. How does the family support itself? Not only cattle, not just cattle. More important, Yitzchak does something that his father and his son do not do.
Trade?
No, what does Yitzchak do for a living? Anybody know? We're gonna see it in a second.
He sits and learns.
Yitzchak does not sit and learn. No. Let us not kid ourselves. They were not sitting in Kolel. Okay, they were not sitting in Kolel. Okay. One second. So that's the question we're going to ask. What does Rashi say on Kitzayid Befiv? Kitzayid Befiv. Rashi sees it all in terms of religious terminology. See Rashi on Vayavit Yitzchak Kitzav Kitzayid Befiv? This is based on the Midrash. Yodea Tzayid. Esav was Yodea Tzayid. Let's look at the Rashi. Rashi is great. Rashi on Chav Zayin. Vayigdalu ha-ne'arim vayihi Esav. See Rashi on Chav Zayin? Vayigdalu ha-ne'arim vayihi Esav. Kol zman shehayu ktanim, as long as they were children, lo hayu nikarim b'maaseihem. You couldn't really tell what they were like. By the way, which is true or not true?
Yeah, totally true.
What? You can't tell what a child's like when he's a child? Okay. I was going to say no.
In certain aspects. What? Most of the time, you usually generally know what they're going to be like.
No, I don't agree, Rena. I think that it amplifies.
I'm shocked you don't agree.
With some kids.
Okay, thank you.
Some kids, their personality stays the same and some change. I think
the personalities are the personalities, and the question is, how do they develop them and what direction?
No, I had one kid that was so kvetchy as a kid. Like as a baby and a
ignore, forget
toddler.
Baby. I don't mean baby.
Okay, so older, you mean?
Like, you know.
You kind of already see.
Yeah. You see, I think you see that. Well, you see their nature, and then it comes out in different ways.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I'm saying? The job of a parent is to take that nature and direct it in a way that's constructive for the child, as opposed to try to, you know, change them in some way. Anyway, ve'en adam midakdek b'hem mativam. Nobody can tell what their nature was. When they grew up, V'zeh pireish la'avodah zarah. Whoa. Hmm. Like all of a sudden, Yaakov, he went to yeshiva, and Esav, where did he go? Avodah zarah. Like idolatry. Yodei atzayid. What was the yodei atzayid? Latzud uliramot et aviv befiv. Yodei atzayid. Remember we said, kitzayid befiv. Rashi is now telling us that. What does it mean, kitzayid befiv? He put tzayid in his mouth. In whose mouth? In Yitzchak's mouth. Tzayid befiv. Right? The regular translation is, right, Esav was yodei atzayid. Yaakov loved Esav, kitzayid befiv. Tzayid befiv is in the mouth of who? You guys are so used to Rashi that you're interpreting the pshat.
How do we know?
Vayehav Yitzhak et Esav.
Okay, Esav loved himself.
Right. Why do I love Esav?
He doesn't need me.
He doesn't need me. He takes care of him. You know, they're like that's always true. We always have two kinds of kids: a kid that comes to you always for money because like whatever, and then the kid that just like babysits all the time and works and never needs anything because they're self-sufficient. So yeah, Yitzhak loved Esav because Esav, you know, he never needed an allowance, he never wanted money. He always took care of himself.
They didn't maybe have a discussion on like side with Eve, like they were both like to discuss hunting. I don't know.
So Rashi takes that whole thing and turns it upside down. It's not side with Eve of Esav, it's Said trapping Bepiv in the mouth of Yitzchak. He would trap him, he would trick him. Kitzayid Bepiv. Latzud uliramot et aviv befiv. This is a very famous Rashi. He would trap and to trick his father with his mouth. He would say, v'sho'alo, and ask him, Abba, he'ach ve'asrim et ha'melach ve'et ha'teven. Dad, how do we take off ma'aser? How do we take off ma'asrot on salt? And he'd ask in very, very like intelligent questions in order to make it as if he was really, you know, very religious. He faked it. Like and as you know, I was actually one of the programs in Orot that I run is a program for yi'utz. I mean, you know, for people who are going to be yo'atzim in the schools. And so it's a master's program for yo'atzim. So we had a visitor come in schools, and he said from the Agaf HaCharedi. Because one of our programs is specifically geared towards Charedim who are learning for a Torah Sheni. So we had one of the people who's in charge of the Agaf HaCharedi come and speak about what's going on in the field. And, you know, it was really great. So they asked me to come and give a few, like, you know, introduce him and say a few words. So I said, look at this week's parasha. We have, you know, Yaakov and Esav. We have Yaakov was Ishtam Yoshevo Alim. And Esav was Yodei Atzayid Ishtadeh. We have two brothers. And this is like, you know, this is, imagine what would have happened if Yitzhak had a Yoetz who was in the schools and like saw the children developing differently and was able to treat each child in the way that they need him. You know, like this is what you have to deal with. Like to see these children, to see how different they are, and to understand their needs and to try to deal with them. I think they liked the Dvar Torah. That was very relevant. Anyway. So like we all know that children are like that. They act one way outside and then they come home and they just totally lie to their parents because they just don't want to deal with the fallout of, you know what I'm saying? And as parents, you always wonder to yourself, like, you know, you see other kids and your kids say, oh, those kids smoke and they drink and whatever. And you always wonder to yourself, well, yeah, I won't even articulate it, but you understand what I'm saying, meaning there's no guarantees because everybody else sees it, but then, like, how do the parents not know? We're all those parents. All of us are those parents. How do you know, like, you thinking you would know? You wouldn't know.
No.
You would not know. There's no way to know.
No. When you took the foster child, so one of the questions they asked us was, what is your philosophy on lying?
On lying, yeah.
So we said, we don't have a philosophy, we trust what they say. And they said, but what happens if you know that they're lying? Like, what do you... So we said, no, we choose to trust them.
Really?
And she said, oh, that's an interesting philosophy. And it was interesting because the teenager said to us afterwards, she said, you always trusted me, so I had to behave
really interesting.
Properly because you really trusted me. You know, and I knew sometimes she was lying.
Uh-huh.
But there was...
See, our attitude is different. Our attitude is, I don't... Like I like not that I don't tolerate it, but I want you to tell me the truth and we'll deal with the, you know, and then we'll try to deal with the aftermath afterwards, but don't lie to me.
Right.
Because there's nothing to be gained from lying to me. Whereas, maybe you're right. I don't know. Does that cause them to lie?
Are they perfect?
What? No. I understand you're not perfect. And if you mess up, you know what I'm saying? We will do our best not to explode. You know what I'm saying? As long as you don't lie. Like, you know, please don't lie to me. You know, I don't know if it works. Who knows? Anyway, so that's...
Only they know.
What?
Only they know.
So that's it's so fascinating that this is mamash in the parsha. Yodeat Sayid leramot b'fiv. Like children from the very beginning of time understood that rather than deal with the fallout of disappointing your father, of not being who you want, it's just better to pretend, to lie. Okay, but that's not pshat.
You know what? A eulogy of a daughter of a rabbi we were very close to, was very very involved in Kiruv, and she had gone off the derech at one point, and
his daughter.
His daughter had gone off the derech, and the one thing she just kept saying at the funeral was that Abba, it didn't matter what I did wrong, you always accepted me for who I was. You never judged me, you accepted me where I was, and you were a beacon of where I should be.
Hmm.
And she came back.
They don't always come back. Yeah, they don't always come back.
No, they don't always, but she knew that her Abba was always there, you know, and she... Whatever.
I understand. It's not simple at all. Not simple at all.
It's easier, I think, to come back if you're loved.
If she hadn't had that.
Right. If she had to lie to him.
She would have come back.
It doesn't really work, the lying anyway. I mean, it's interesting. Like, yeah, it's so interesting that Yitzchak is known. He's known at the end of the parasha. The quality that he's most known for is Yitzchak, the father. What's he most known for? No, Yitzchak. He's not Esav. Yitzchak, the father.
Yitzchak
is deceptive? How is Yitzchak deceptive?
Yaakov is deceptive.
Yitzchak, the father, what is he most known for? How is he described? What is Yitzchak, not Esav. Yitzchak, the father.
He was just dumb.
No, he was blind. He was blinded, and what blinded him? Do you remember the Midrash? Anybody remember the Midrash? What?
No, it's the smoke.
At the Akedat Yitzchak?
The tears?
The tears of the angels blinded him. He's blinded by his tmimut. You know what I'm saying? He just can't see beyond. The imagery is so powerful and a little frightening.
And it might not be physical.
What?
It might not
right.
be
no,
physical.
He was physically blind, but there's obviously, he's clearly physically
but
blind. He feels him and whatever. But
that he was blinded by the sacrifices of Esav's wives that were there, Abu Dazara.
Possibly also. I'm not familiar, but that's ringing a bell. Anyway, this idea of like Yaakov and Esav, so Yitzchak is trusting. Yitzchak, he accepts. He's tamim. Yitzchak is the Ode. He's called the Olat Tamima. Okay? And Esav takes advantage of that and tricks him. That's the Midrash. Rabbi Dan loves the Midrash, but he wants to know what's the pshat. Like, why would Yitzchak like Esav because Yodiat Sayyid Ish Sadeh? Like, let's assume that Yitzchak knows everything about Esav. He sees him and he understands exactly what Esav is. Now, let's take the Midrash off the table for a second. Okay? And understand, well, let's assume that Esav is strong, he's a hunter, he's a brute. Why would Yitzchak like that? So Rabbi Dan says, in order to understand that, we have to turn the page to Perek Kaf Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay, and understand, what is Yitzchak, what's going on with Yitzchak in this situation? No. Turn to Perek Kaf Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay, what did Yitzchak do? Yitzchak, what did he do for a living? So we're skipping, the section we're skipping is Yitzchak wanted to go, there was a famine and he wanted to follow Abraham's footsteps and leave, and God comes to him and says, no, you have to stay in Eretz Canaan, right? You can't leave Eretz Israel. And so he stays, and then Avimelech takes his wife, and then Avimelech finds out that it's not his sister, and he gives him back, right? The story of Abraham literally repeating itself, like father, like son. Okay, but look at Pasuk Yud Bet, Vayizra Yitzchak Ba'aretz Ahi. What did Yitzchak do?
Planted.
He planted. What did Abraham do for a living? Shepherd. What did Yaakov do for a living? Shepherd. Yitzchak planted. It's a very important theme in modern day Tanakh interpreters, right? The idea of the difference between a shepherd and a planter and a farmer. A shepherd, right? If you, a shepherd, the essence of a shepherd is they don't have to plant roots. They never plant roots. Where are they going to? Wherever there's place to shepherd, to herd their sheep, they move around. They're nomads. It's like, you know, the what's it called? The Bedouin, right? The Bedouin, if you try and say, no, you guys, we'll build you houses, just live here, they don't want it. They just don't want it. Yitzchak, on the other hand, he wasn't a vegetarian. He wanted Yaakov. He wanted the.
Oh, right.
He loved the venison. He loved the whatever. Okay. But Yitzchak planted. He was a farmer. God said to him, "Stay in Eretz Canaan. You don't wander around." And what does that mean? He took it in a literal sense. Stay in Eretz Canaan. Plant, farm. Okay. I.e., he found great blessing. Me'asha arim. Okay. How much it was worth? Meaning. His value, the things that he planted, increased 100-fold. Vayivarcheu Hashem, and he was blessed. So he was not only just a farmer, he was a very successful farmer. So what happens? Vayidala ish vayelech haloch v'gadel ad higadal me'od. He became a very, very important farmer, a very important person. Where is he living? Where in Canaan? He's living near Elimelech, near Avimelech, near Eretz Plishtim. He's on the Plishti border. Probably they say, Rabbi Meidan says, near Nitzan. Not Rehovot is not where today. Rehovot is now where Nitzan is today. You know where Nitzan is today, right? Right off of Ashkelon. Okay. Va'igda va'ilam mikne utzon u'mikne bakar va'avudah rava va'ikonu oto plishtim. So great. So what happens?
They get jealous.
V'chol ha'be'irot asher chavru avdei avi b'mei Avraham simut hitmun plishtim va'imalum afar. In order to plant, what do you need?
Water.
So what do the plishtim do? They cut off his water. Yom Rabbi Melech et Yitzchak, lech me'imanu, ki atzamta mimenu ma'od. Get out. Okay? We can't have you here. So what does Yitzchak do? Vayelech mishan Yitzchak. Vayichan b'nachal grar, vayeshev shan. So he moves to Nachal Grar. What? Why? You tell me why.
What, for peace? Just not to fight?
Weirdest thing happened this week. Phone rings. That's so weird. Phone rings. Of course, I don't answer the phone anymore. So my son answers the phone. He comes in. He has like this white look on his face. I said, "Who was it?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "What did they say?" He said, "There was some boy on the phone." And he said, "Tavili mea shekel b'park machar o ani abitz lecha." What? It was like so weird. Like, if you didn't understand, give me 100 shekel. If you bring me 100 shekel to the park, I'll beat you up. This poor kid is 11. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
and he knew which
kid. No, he had no idea who it is. Really? You heard the story?
What?
About Pataki, the prank phone call?
Yes.
Yeah. And he was really upset. He was, like, really, really upset. What? And, like, I was never a tough guy. I was always bigger than people, but I, you know what I'm saying? But nobody ever taught me to whatever. And I was trying to reassure him, and it's a prank phone call, and he was really scared. And at some point I said to him, if somebody comes to you in the park and says, "Where's my 100 shekel?" Hit him in the face as hard as you can. Because that's the only, like, somebody who's trying to bully you, like, there's no answer. Like, you don't move back. You don't give them 100 shekel. It's not going to make it better. What's he going to do the next time?
200.
He dug new wells. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so what did the plishtim do? We don't like that well. You dig another well. So we don't like that well either. Like, you know, running away from a bully. All in a car. Like, he's trying to follow in his father's footsteps. But Abraham, well, the difference between Abraham and Yitzhak is, Abraham was a military power. Don't forget, Abraham fought in the wars of the four kings and the five kings. He didn't mess with Abraham. Like, what about Yitzchak? Every time Abimelech pushes him, he just moves back. Every time Abimelech pushes him, he moves back. I don't know if you followed the news this week. So on the Golan Heights, four bonkers terrorists decided, they saw an Israeli army patrol, and they decided, like, on their pickup truck with a machine gun on the back, they decided to attack them. Okay, so thankfully no soldiers were injured. And they started shelling them with mortars, and then so these are the guys called in the Air Force, and they blew up the truck. Okay? Baruch Hashem. But they didn't just blow up the truck. The next day, the army sent in more planes and blew up some... No, it wasn't a weapons factory. It was an empty building. Right, it was an empty building. What's the message?
Don't mess with us.
Right. Because they only understand one language. Really? Really, you really want to, you know, you can't deal with your own civil war. You want to bring us into it? It's not going to be good. Because that's what they understand. And hopefully they'll get the message. Hopefully. You know what I'm saying? In this crazy region of the world, you never know people, how crazy people are. You just have no idea. In desperation, what people do. Okay? Vayachberu, Pasuk Yetet, Avdei Yitzchak Banachal. So they dug another well. Vayimsu Usham Be'er Mayim Chayim. And they found another well. You're talking about, you know, it's not so simple to find fresh well water in this area. It's not so simple. You know, how many wells do they have to dig in order to find a good one?
What happened to all of the souls that Abraham had kind of...
He has people. But they all follow... What?
He's a peacemaker.
Vayarivu ro'e gerar yiro'e Yitzchak le'mor. Lanu Hamayim. So the Ro'e Grar follow Ra'itza, and the Ro'e Grar, the shepherds, they say, it's our water. Ra'ikra Shem HaBe'er Eshek. He called it Eshek. Look at Rashi, what Eshek means? Irur, complaint. But Oshek, what does Lashok mean? That's not what it means. Eshek in Hebrew means something more. What does it mean? Yeah, Daniela?
To take things from people. It's to Leramot.
It's called to bully. Means to take something by force. Why? Because they bullied him. And so what does he do? Chaf Aleph. Vayachbu be'er acheret. Vayarivu gam alea. Vayikrash masitna. Okay, he digs another well and he runs away. Vayatek misham. So he goes somewhere else. Vayichbor be'er acheret. Velo rabu alea. Vayikrash ma rechovot. He calls it rechovot. So finally he moves so far away. It's not Rehovot of today. Rabbi Meidan says it's not. It's like, where does he say it was? He says, here, that's called Cholot Chalutza. Chalutza Sands. Anybody know where Cholot Chalutza is? You know where Chalutza Sands is today? Cholot Chalutza is on the Egyptian border. He's moving farther and farther south, farther and farther away. You know what I mean? It's where Chalutza Sands is? Have a good day. Okay? It's farther and farther away and farther until finally, like, the police team can't have no, like, they can't even claim that it's ours because they're like so far away, like whatever. Just leave them alone. This is Pshat in the Chumash. Okay? And then he says, Hirchiv Hashem lanu parinu ba'aretz. How do you know where Chalutza is? Because then it says, Vaya'al misham be'er sheva. Okay. Right? You know what I'm saying? If you're going up, if you're traveling north to get to Be'er Sheva, you're in the middle of nowhere. Like, what are you thinking to yourself? Like, you're like, yeah. Pushing him farther and farther and farther and farther back. Okay? Suddenly, Rav Meidan points out, and we're going to skip. So he builds a mizbeach, blah, blah, blah. One second. Here we are. Vayal misham be'er sheva. Vayera elav Hashem ba'layla hu vayomer ane uchi alehi Avraham avicha al tira ki itcha anochi uverachticha vihirbeiticha birbedi azaracha ba'avur Avraham avdi. I'm going to bless you. Vayiven sham mizbeach vayikra b'shem Hashem vayet sham mahalo vayikru sham avdei Yitzhak be'er. And they dug another well. Great. Pasuk Chavav. Now something strange happens. Va'avimelech halach acharav migrar. Avimelech followed him from Grar. Uficho v'achuzat mireihu. V'achuzat mireihu. A gathering of his mireim, of his shepherds. Uficho tzar tzva'o. A delegation of plishtim come to Yitzhak. Right? In this place, in Rehovot. Vayomer aleihem Yitzchak, madu abatem elai? What are you doing here? Vatem sneitim oti, vatashachuni me'eichem. You hated me. You sent me away. Vayomru, ra'o ra'inu ki aya Hashem imach. We saw that Hashem was with you. Vano'mar, tihina ala beinotenu, beinenu, ubeinach, v'nichretam, brit imach. We want to make a deal. We want to make a covenant. We saw that. We see that God is with you. We want to make a covenant. Im ta'aseh imanu ra'ah kasher lo nega'ucha. Really? We haven't touched you. It's like unbelievable. Like it's like today in politics. Like facts don't matter. It's whatever I say is true. The kasher isinu imcha rak tov. V'nashalechecha b'shalom, and we'll send you away in peace. Ata baruch Hashem. Says Rabbi Dan, what the heck? Fight. Struggle, strife. And suddenly Avimelech shows up and says, Kumbaya. He shows up with his minister of defense and says, we'd like to make a covenant with you. Why in the world did Avimelech show up and wanting to make a covenant? What?
It's a repeat from Abraham. He had a he made a covenant.
What? Abraham had a covenant. When does the covenant happen? Yes. When? After what?
After he took his well.
No. After what?
And he ran away.
What? When is the covenant with Abraham?
He ran away.
It's the covenant with Abraham and Hashem,
not Abimelech. When does Abimelech come with him? After Yitzchak was born. No, that's Parshat Be'er. It was 2 weeks ago. Why does Abimelech come? Okay. Rashi says, Lefisha Raoshi Yatza Mishchunat Sodom L'Shalom. He emerged peacefully from Sodom. Ve'im ha-melachim nilcham ve'naflu biyado, right? And he fought with the melachim, and they fell at his hands. Ve'nifgeda ishto v'skunav. They saw that there was something unique about Abraham. It wasn't just that all of a sudden they come out of nowhere. So, but here, like, there's strife, and then all of a sudden Abimelech comes and says, "All right, I want to make peace with you, Yitzchak." What happened? Okay. Says Rav Meidan, one word, Esav happened. There's a lot going on behind the scenes, is what he says. Okay? Esav grew up. Could you imagine? Yaakov, we're going to put on the side. Yaakov, he's the bookworm. Esav is not the bookworm.
No, but they're not close. Like, Yaakov and Esav are not on great.
Forget Yaakov and Esav. Esav grew up watching his father being pushed and pushed and taken advantage of, okay, by the police team over and over again. Okay, what's Esav gonna do? Like, you know what I'm saying? What? How?
Hard.
We know Esav later on. Right? When we meet Esav, when Yaakov returns, what does Esav have with him? Of? How many? Esav was coming with
400.
Thank you. Very good. Okay.
my kids taught it to me.
Yeah.
You know where that's from?
I didn't know it.
613 Terra Avenue.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I can't believe I say this every year. I think 613 Terra Avenue.
And Yaakov
daven to Hashem.
Vayishlach
Yaakov. Right. I grew up on this. I'm like so much, but. I remember it was like a big deal. We had it on records. I remember my cousin had a record player. He had like one of those like Fisher Place record players, and like it was a big deal. Like the only two ones that
what? It was the same Mishnah says cousin. He got all the answers right.
Who?
He said that you had a cousin.
Yeah, that's the one who read the Midrash says. Yeah, that's true.
he had all the information.
But it was great. I think I found it online. I think I have all of them. I bought once a CD of all of them together. The best ones were Reishit and Shemot. They were by far the best ones. It was this thing called 613 Tara Avenue. You don't know. None of you know it. Like,
I know of it, but I learned this from my kids.
Yeah. Uncle, but this was.
That was the only Jewish thing we got. Oh, that was
really? Do you know what I'm talking about? 613
Tara Avenue? We were deprived.
Okay, I'm gonna share it with you. I'm gonna share it with you on the group. You have to listen to it because it's like this story of this kid who comes to Tara Avenue and he meets all these different inanimate objects who talk to him and tell them like a story of the Parsha, and he sings a little ditty about the Parsha. You know, and the next one, he's in a carnival. Like the second, I remember it like so clearly, Breishit and Shemot. Vayikra was like a week after that, but like it was so clear. Like he meets the lamppost, walk, 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 don't walk, don't walk, you know what I'm saying? And it was done by this man, his name was Rav Shmuel Kunda. Shmuel Kunda he was an educator, but he was mostly, he owned the camp that I went to called Camp Nari. And he was also an artist, a very well-known artist. He drew beautifully, cartoons and what have you. And he was also, he did this thing called 613 Tara Avenue, and he did all the voices. Like, I remember going to camp, Shabbos afternoon, he would tell a story for an hour. And we would sit on, like, he had these steps, like, on the side of the cafeteria, packed. And we would just listen to him and, tell stories. And he taught Parsha to a generation of children. Like a little bit, you know. It was really great. I'll you know, listen to it. I'll send you. I have to have it here somewhere. The music. Anyway. So Esav was coming with 400. Esav had a band of 400 men. What do you think? He just got it when Yaakov grew up later? Right? Esav was a thug. What do thugs do? What do thugs have?
Followers.
Right. They have
militias.
What?
Like militias.
They have hangers on. Okay? That's how they gain power. And people like to hang on to them. Why? Because it gives them a sense of association and strength. We think that just happened when he was an adult? No, it happens right away. We see it nowadays. You know, you see it like people that do that. Like, people are attached to people of power. They want to be associated with. They want to be associated with strength. Esav, for whatever you say, Esav loved his father. No matter what you say about him, he loved his father. He took care of his father. He protected his father.
He didn't want to be like his father.
What?
He didn't want to be like his father.
Well, 1 second. Okay. Rav Meidan writes. Okay. Esav gadal bebayit haraduf. Esav grew up in this pursued house. Hamanusha minechasav ve'ara'av. Right? They suffered. Every time you have to uproot, right? You lose your plants, you lose your property, you lose the irrigation, you lose months or years of work. You're living in famine, and you got to go plant again and start over.
And the humiliation.
V'hafachbo l'nar u'l'boger. That's the house he grew up in. Bebayit zeh, in this house, hanekama beplishtim, right? The nekama, revenge against the plishtim. V'hatzorech l'lamdam leka chayu lechem chuko. That was his breakfast. He ate that for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Hatred of the plishtim and the desire to get vengeance on him. Ki yadu atzayid, someone who knows how to hunt. Piteach yeda v'kosher lechima. He learned how to fight. Asaf elav anashim rekim. He gathered these lost souls. V'hafach otam leligyon zarim echuti shel anashim hachayim al chorban. And he turned them into this militia who knew how to live by the sword. Yachad im hagdud shel arba me'ot ish. So he took his 400 people. Yatza lema'asai pshitut be'eretz plishtim. He took those people and he decided to take his vengeance on the land of Plishtim. Where does he learn this from, Rav Meidan? He says, we find an exact example of this in some place you never would think you would find it, from David HaMelech. Open your Tanakh now. Turn it to Shmuel Aleph, Perek Kav Zayin. What?
We're in a Shmuel Aleph.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
What are you up to?
Exactly where we...
Right this? Oh, excellent. Okay. This is like the...
All the guys that David can get, he collected all the...
Okay. Right. David HaMelech is for a period of time. We don't really focus on this part of his history. We think he was this, singer, songwriter the whole time, and then he became the king. No, not really. Right? There was a long period of time where, first of all, he was a warrior. He was a decorated warrior. Right? David HaMelech is like the total package. He's on the one hand, like emotional and powerful and singer, whatever. He didn't mess around. He was a warrior that you did not want to mess with. Okay, and so for a period of time, though, remember, he was chased by Shaul. Mm-hmm. So he was designated as the outlaw. So what does a person who is designated as the outlaw do? He acts like an outlaw. Mm-hmm. Okay, Perek Chav Zayin. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, Perek Chav Zayin Pasuk. Hey, so David runs away.
You
didn't get there yet?
Wait, Perek Chav Zayin?
Perek Chav Zayin and Shmuel Aleph. The Pasuk Aleph. Vayomer David libo. So David is okay. David has tried in a number of ways to prove to Shaul that he's not his enemy. He has tried to prove to Shaul that he's not his enemy. And no matter what David does, Shaul doesn't believe him. Remember, he took the water jug, and the next time he takes his spear that was sitting right by his head, it could have killed you. Shaul says, "Yeah, you didn't want to kill me. I don't believe you. Whatever." Vayomer David ata esva yom echad biyad Shaul. Shaul's going to kill me one day. The one thing David won't do is kill Shaul. He won't do it for whatever reason. Ein li tov ki imaleit imaleit eretz plishtim v'no ashmi meni shol. I better run away. I'll run away to eretz plishtim. Shaul will leave me alone. Okay. Levakshani od b'chol gvul Yisrael v'niam latiti miyado. So as long as I'm not in Eretz Yisrael, right, he won't run. He doesn't want to risk war with the plishtim to run after me. Vayakam David vayavar hu v'sheish meot ish asher imo. Right. His 600. Where did he get 600 men from? Who comes to hang out with the outlaw? Right. Other outlaws. We don't really think of David as being the leader of some outlaw militia. But there's a period of time, many months, where this is exactly what he is. Vayesha of David Yisrael, then what does he go to? El Achish ben Ma'uch Melech Gat, the king of Gat. Right? Eretz Plishtim. Here. Comes here. Vayesha of Ame Pasuk Gimel. Vayesha of David Imachish begat huva anashav ishu beito. David ushtei nashav achinoam Yisraeli vavigayel eshat navala karmelit. So he runs, he brings his whole like entourage. He's got his whole, he sets up camp. Right? He settles down. Vayugad l'sha'oki barach David Gat. V'lo Yosef Odo Vakshel. No, he's in God. Forget it. Forget it. Not my problem. Vayomer David el Achish. David says to Achish, Imna Mepasukhe. Imna Matzati Chein Be'enecha. Yidnudi Makom Be'achat Arei Asadeh Ve'esh Vasham. Give me some outpost. Arei Sadeh. V'lami Yeshev Abdecha Be'ir Amam Lachaymach. I don't want to stay with you. V'yiten lo Achish V'yomu Et Tziklag. L'chein Aita Tziklag V'machei Yehuda Ad Ayom Hazeh. So it's like David's first home hideout. Right? He builds up this, he gets, you know, it's like his hometown, Tziklag. Vayi mispar ayamim asher yashav David b'stei plishtim yamim ve'arba'a chadashim. A year and 4 months. What does David do during this time? Vayal David va'anashav vayifshetu et hagshuri hagrizi va'amaleki. Translation? Pasuk chet. What does he do? What did he do? And he spread out. Okay, in our words, what does that mean, spread out against? Attacked and conquered. Basically, what did David become?
Conqueror.
A marauding, what's the word I'm looking for? Plunderer. V'hika David et ha'aretz, v'lo yichaye ish v'isha. He killed everyone. He had to pay for his, meaning he didn't just stay in the land of Plishtim for free. Like everybody understood what the deal was. Yes, I'll let you stay here for a fee. How are you going to get your fee? Not my problem. Go take it. Take it from somebody else. And in the process, you're killing many people. Now, David had no problem with this, probably because he believed ultimately this is our land anyway, and sooner or later we're going to have to kill these people anyway. But it is today we would call this morally questionable activity.
There's no social media.
Right. Pasuk Tet. We did Pasuk Tet, okay. Vayomer Achish, so Achish said, Al Pashatetem Hayom. Who'd you kill today? Vayomer David, Al Negev Yehuda, Al Negev Achmeili, Al Negev Akeini, V'ish V'ishta, Pasuk Yehuda, Lo Yechaye David Lahavi Gat Lemor, Pen Yagidu Alenu Lemor. He didn't leave anyone alive, so no one should say, Ko Asa David V'cho Mishpateo, Ko Layamim Asher Yashav B'Stei Plishtim. He didn't leave witnesses.
But he did everything L'Shem Shemaim. He didn't do it for his own.
I'm just reading the Navi. When you go to your Navi share, you can discuss this.
Yeah. Wow.
We haven't gotten to this.
So yeah. Who's teaching it? What's her name?
Adina.
Oh, good. You can have good discussions about this. Yeah. Life is not simple. What? He was forced to become this marauding band of, you know, and he couldn't leave survivors because if he left survivors, it wouldn't be good. Somebody would tell, and then they would say, we can't have this. You know, Achish knew, but what about the people surrounding? You know what I'm saying? You can't do that. So it's very interesting. Like, Rabbi Dan doesn't, you know, he says, what David did with his people, Asa Esav laplishtim atzmam. Right? Esav did exactly the same thing. Right? He had his band of marauders, and he had hatred in his heart, legitimately so. For the things that they did to his father, he had love of his father, and he said, "I'm gonna make this right in my way." Okay. He kept doing it.
Was he justified?
I'll read on. Achrehem, Shaviv Yitzchak Nadad Drom Ma'arav Alebechovot Ulebe'er Lacharim. As his father moved further southwest and southwest, Hu Asa Zod Gam Neshosei Amidbar Shilik Nagnu LaAviv. So Esav understood, I gotta take care of these people. Esav ugdudo ayu giborei chayu. Esav and his band and his militia were warriors. Esav nitzel zot lo rak leparnasa. He didn't just hunt. You know, we think, oh, he was a hunter. I got two deer today, Dad. No. Gam nekama beplishtim. Oshke yalduto benachal grar. Right? He was going to take vengeance on the people that did this to his family. And who noticed this all of a sudden?
No, the king of
Abimelech. Abimelech, Melech Gerar, ufichol sar tzva'o, Abimelech and the minister of defense, ne'elatzim lavo el Yitzchak lebe'er sheva. They don't come because, oh, you're this great guy. Oh, you're this wonderful person. Oh, you're the spiritual person. They have to come. They have to beg him. Shelo ya'aseh imahem ha'ra'ah. Ulechor et lizkor et chasdam. Remember all the good that we did for you. We have no memory of such things. Right? And you know, we don't really have any memory. Okay? That's how he says, kach nichretet brit damim. That's how you get a covenant. How do you get deals? And by the way, Netanyahu says this all the time. You don't make deals. People don't make deals with people that are weak. People make covenants and treaties with people that are strong. Right? Strength begets peace. Weakness, and this is something that it's an ongoing debate in the world today.
Mm-hmm. Right? But Avimelech obviously assumed that Yitzchak would have influence over his brother.
His son. Of course he has. Yes, of course he has influence over his son. The only one who has influence over his son is Yitzchak. That's the only one who could say, Esav, stop. I made a deal. I made an agreement.
But also they can't go speak to Esav because Esav won't listen.
Who can't?
Abimelech.
No, who can? He can't beat him. He can't, you know what I'm saying? He can't win. It's his uncontrollable force. The only way you can get control is by making an agreement with Yitzchak. Right? So, and that's what Abimelech says. So interestingly, he has a whole lot. So the thing that Rabbi Dan says is that's why Vayahav Yitzchak et Esav ki tzayid b'fiv. Why did he love him? Because the thing that he couldn't do, he kept moving away, he kept running away. He didn't have the power. He was an olat mima. His father almost sacrificed him. It wasn't his nature, but he had a son who did. And if you look at it this way, Yitzchak was not proud of the fact that he kept running away and kept running away. It wasn't, What?
It didn't work.
And he was very proud of the fact that he had a son that would stand up for him and cause the nations around him to leave him alone finally, to allow him to settle down, to allow him to do what he wanted to do. So then the question becomes then, on the other hand, why Rivka ohevet et Yaakov?
And how did he resolve it? Did he make peace? You haven't told us the...
Oh, he did, yeah. I mean, he did. They made peace. They made a covenant. Yitzchak, of course, would, right. And when Esav came home that day, probably, and he said, oh, I made a deal with Abimelech, Esav probably said,
what were you thinking?
Why? Why'd you do that? Right. What's interesting, okay, first of all, you have to understand what Maidan did is, he's filling in, what he's doing is, none of this is here. You understand? So it's very important to understand. He's trying to piece in information with questions based on speculation. There's no record of any covenant of Esav doing any of this. Although, if Esav is who we think he is, makes sense.
Okay. Because initially, I thought that because maybe when Hashem came to Yitzchak, it was something that they could all see.
Correct.
And then maybe
that. Right, he's a spiritual person,
no,
and that's
no,
a person.
Came in fire and brimstone.
Oh, that, there's no record of that either. Now you're adding information too.
And that could also.
The other thing you'd have to say is that they intuited, they sensed the spirituality of Yitzchak or something like that. Which is also difficult.
That's how Hashem appeared to Yitzchak. So it could be that they all...
God appeared to Yitzchak.
But maybe they all knew somehow.
How would they know? Right. It's just, no matter, so you have to fill in information somehow.
Yeah.
So Rabbi Dan, if you think about it, it's fascinating. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's very fascinating to say that Esav... The question is, why would the Torah not say so? If something was so significant and so important, why would it not say that...
It's not giving any
zchut to Esav. It's not giving him any credit at all. You know, and so he has, by the way, he has a whole essay. He continues and talks about the idea that in Chazal's view, right, the difference between David and Esav is David changes. You know what I'm saying? This acting in the way that David acted, he acted out of necessity. He needed to survive. Right? There was no way for him to survive. If he's not willing to kill Shaul, he has to run away. If he has to run away, like, he has to pay off Achish. He has to pay off his host. How's he going to survive? Like, so he's forced, in a sense, in order to commit questionable moral acts. The question then to become, does that become who you are? Or does that become, or do you somehow, are you able to emerge from that and not become? And so Rabbi Dan suggests that, as opposed to David, who then emerges from it and makes the proper moral choices and changes their ways. And by the way, they suffer terribly. Ziklag is destroyed. Ultimately, it's not a, you know, saying if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. On the same time, Esav never emerges. We never see Esav emerging from this, from his moral quandary. Esav is always the guy that's, you know, with the band and whatever. That's his nature. What? So this, by the way, illustrates.
Why not?
Well, right. Perhaps. I never heard that. It's very interesting. Anyway.
The difference is with David, it was a means, and with Esav, it was a goal.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Makes you feel better if it's a means?
Yes.
Oh, you're just looking for, like, but he's David HaMelech!
No, it does. It comes back to what I was saying. Hashem's in front of you always, and this is what you're doing because this is how you're surviving, but you're knowing that it's a means to get through where you are at the moment. It's different to if it's your goal to be the toughest and the biggest and the untouchable.
Excuse me, what did Esav, how did Esav justify himself ultimately, if what we say is true, if according to this Mahalla, of course it's justifiable. I look how I protected my father. If I would go and
yes, but then after he didn't need to protect his father, he still carried on doing it.
By the way, David carries on doing it as well, but in what context? In what context?
As king.
So they still plunder and kill all the Plishtim, but now they just do it. It was always the same Shemayim.
Yeah.
So he says, what about Rivka? How could Rivka, what happened to Rivka? How didn't Rivka see this? So he says, interestingly, remember we saw the beginning of the Midrash, the beginning of it says, she has this nevuah, right? There's no evidence that she shared that with anyone. Nobody ever said that she told her husband, Rav Ya'avot Sa'ir, that I had this nevuah, that the younger one is the one that's going to inherit. And it stands to reason that she didn't. Meaning she goes through all these machinations, you know, with sending Yaakov to seal the bracha and whatever. She just felt that it wasn't, I don't know, she had the understanding that she should not reveal the nebuah to her husband. But instead it had to, it's also possible,
just couldn't digest, he wouldn't be able to digest.
It's also very possible to say, Rivka grew up in a house of Esau.
Mm-hmm.
She grew up in that house of power and force. And she understands, on the one hand, yeah, you think it's so nice, you see the benefits, but you don't see the cost in the long term. You don't really appreciate what it does to your family, what it does to your children, what it's going to do to you. Because if you live that way, you'll die that way too. So it's a question of finding that interesting balance between Esav and Yaakov. All right, we'll stop here.